I got tired of liking my job.
Oh, we were talking about the black lung, and then I...
Yeah.
And I take her out here.
You
say some of the old guys...
Some of the old guys would tell us they wouldn't have that job for love nor money.
That's
man, that'll kill you. Well, we thought we had the world by the tail. All we had to do was we had a piece of iron about 3 inches wide with a hook on the end. And you'd hook it on the back of the car, you know, and it'd come out here and bow up like that. And you'd sit on that and your feet on the bumpers of the car and you'd ride out.
Mm-hmm.
Well, when you get to bottom, you just unhook your seat and go on to your empty trip and so out in the car and ride back in again. And that's about all there was to it. Well, eventually that mine shut down and went different places and never had sand dust like that. But I went up the Dow Chemical in 1941, and I worked in places up there that I figured was every bit as bad as the coal mine, if not worse. And I personally believe that it could have been a Dow Chemical plant just as much as it could have been a coal mine, because once a week I had to go down to the mag cell. And they made that dull metal down there, and they had pots, and they'd put I don't know, remember what they would put in them pots, but they had anodes, great big anodes, about that big round, probably about 5 feet long. They'd have, I don't know how many, two or three of them stuck down in that pot, and then they had electricity heating that pot. Well, let it boil that stuff all up, you know, and finally the dull metal had come to the top, and the fellows had was operating there. They had dippers, about half the size of a pail, and they'd skim that stuff off the top of that kettle and pour it in molds.
Oh, yeah.
Well, that's where they got their dull metal. But those anodes would burn away, and about once a week they'd have to pull them out and replace them with new ones, and maybe had some brickland to do around there, and they had a copper bus bar there, half inch thick by 9 inches wide, and had cables from there hooked to these things. Well, that stuff would all have to come down and lay there, and then it'd get all green. It wouldn't take no time for it to get all green. Well, then we called on there to put it back together again, hook it up. We'd have to take a sander, electric sander, and sand all that green stuff off of there and shine it all up, and then put clamps on it and clamp it together. And there was no such a thing as respirators or anything there either.
So that was the old company.
So I think, in the chlorine cell was the same thing. That damn chlorine gas. I was in the hospital twice from getting caught in that chlorine gas.
Wow.
So personally, I think it could have been Dow just as much as it could have been a coal mine.
Well, as you remember, getting back to the mine, do you remember the company doing anything to try to help you guys with try to help
up the
keep the dust out? No, in the coal mines, did the company place any kind of fans or anything in the coal mine where it would run the dust out of there?
They had...
they used to force air into you. That helped a little bit.
Yeah, they had one fan that forced air down in a coal mine, and the only place they ever done anything different was over at the Black Diamond, way out, probably I don't know, it'd be about a half mile or three quarters of a mile from the main shaft. They sunk another shaft for an air shaft.
Yeah, you've been walking.
And also, so men could climb up there. If anything happened in between, they could come out that shaft.
There was an emergency exit.
Yeah.
Now, were there a lot of demands from the guys for emergency shafts? Like, for example, those that feared that they might be trapped down into the mines?
Well, I don't remember complaining about it or anything.
Was there ever anybody trapped in the mines that's,
well,
that you worked in?
Well, not here that I know of.
Not around here.
Well, you get
did
up
you ever have anybody talk to the management about something like that happened? Like in a labor negotiation?
They had no grievances, didn't they, Carl?
Well,
they were just sad
no.
They went home.
Yeah.
They had grievance, I guess, but as far as we were concerned,
to the regular mine.
Were most of the men happy with their work there at that time?
Well, some of them wouldn't do anything else.
You wouldn't do anything else.
No.
Yeah.
Did you have a labor union? Did you have any type of a labor union?
Yeah.
I don't think Michigan had any non-union mines, did they, Carl?
Uh-huh.
I don't think Michigan had very few non-union mines, did they?
I think there was union mines far back as I can remember. I don't think there was ever any scat mines.
I can remember a lot of.
Well, there was
in the south.
There was a couple of cooperative mines.
All of the coal mines my dad
a bunch of men went together and sunk mines.
In the Saginaw area, I believe there was one called the Saginaw.
Well, right, you know where Biquette's nursery is on North Side Saginaw Road? And you see that shale pile there? Well, that was a cooperative mine there.
They had one called a Consolidated Coal Company. Run by Mr. Randall and Harry Wicks. Miners and shippers. They had several of them in the Saginaw area. A group of men run.
That mine there that you're talking about, that was that Midland mine.
That Randall?
Yeah.
That Randall?
Yeah.
That's what they call it. Everybody said the Midland Mine, but that really the official name for that was the Randall Mine.
Read that over again.
They own a group of them. One was called the Barnard Coal Company, the Central Coal Company, Chappelle and Fordney, the Riverside Mine, the Northern Coal Company, the Pierre Marquette, the Standard, the Saginaw Mine, the Shiawassee Mine. They were all in this. And this company, Consolidated Coal
is
Company.
That the river down there?
Now, was Mr. Lewis? I used to hear a lot about. I believe it was John L. Lewis.
Well, he was the president of the United Mine Workers.
Did he ever come in this area?
No.
He never come around. Did he send representatives around here that?
We'll
talk to you guys and listen to your grievances. And
the guys that did that, Gordon, were state.
Oh, they were.
We had a president.
Yeah.
We had a president of this local.
Inspectors.
And then wanted to come time for a new contract. I suppose he'd be in with John L. I don't know. I think.
Yeah.
All the soft coal mines seemed like they'd come out about the same time of the year. And then the hard coal companies, they'd be come out by themselves too.
Oh, yeah.
But
you say most everybody seemed to be pretty satisfied with their job.
Oh, yeah.
It was a way of life. It was that guy with a cane, and he was just a way of life. That was old Humphrey. In that period, it really thrived from the coal mining, didn't it?
Oh yeah.
You'd go there into Auburn on Saturday night, and gee, the streets would be full of people, and that's the only way a lot of people had to get in there would be to walk.
Express the bars. Yeah, the bars were full of
them. For the coal miners.
Yeah.
You said there were state inspectors that come around every so often?
Yeah.
That's the deal. They had the United Mine Workers Inspector hired by the state to come around to these coal mines and inspect the coal mines to see that everything was in order for the safety of the men. But a day or two before he arrived, the company got word of it some way, through the grapevine, and they'd come around and they'd get everything all in tip-top shape.
A little hanky-panky, yeah.
Yeah, and then after he was gone, why, they'd be back to the same old thing.
What would you call that, politics, then?
Huh?
Would you call that politics?
That's what I imagine. What? Imagine the same guy up at Dow Chemical. He never said a dang thing around the coal mines.
Oh, yeah?
But up at the Dow Chemical plant, I was up on a stepladder. I wasn't standing right on the top of it, but I was doing electrical work, and I was up pretty close to the top, and boy, he come around. Raised Cain with me about not having somebody there holding a stepladder for me. I says, come to think of it, I says, what happened to that brain of yours when he used to go around a coal mine? I says, never worked like that before.
That stopped him.
You wasn't interested in anybody in a coal mine.
So in other words, you didn't think they cared too much about safety, the coal miners.
No.
They didn't care too much about it. You say there was a lot of coal taken out of here at that time. Where was it used? Where was the soft coal, this bituminous coal used?
Where was it used?
Right. What did they use it mainly for?
Well, I couldn't say where it all went to. But, I suppose all the factories around, like the sugar factory there, I think they burnt coal there, and the high schools and all that burnt coal.
Did they use the soft coal in the railroad engines?
Sure they
did. Yeah.
That's what they used to power the railroad engines.
Yeah. They made their own
power. What year did you quit the mines?
Well, I think... the last company coal mine was about 1945.
I think the last one around here was in St. Charles, 1952, I believe, was the last year that they...
Oh, that might have been a cooperative mine.
Yeah. But
I think maybe, Carl, that you're
left
out there because...
Yeah, there was one out there because they allowed... some of the old coal miners that worked around here to go out there and work
that shaft at Swan Creek.
Work for a short period of time in order to draw their
pension, I suppose.
Pension or Social Security or something. I forget what it was now anymore.
Well, see, if you started during the war, then you worked through the 20s and through the 30s, the years of the Depression, right?
I worked till 1941.
Till 1941. How was it during the Depression? I don't imagine there was too much demand for it because all the factories were shut down and there wasn't too much production.
No, that's when things got bad. I think
you were married at that time and had a couple
of... Yeah, we hadn't been...
Right.
It kept tapering off. They was putting these shafts in shape so they could shut down and start up just about any time they wanted to.
Oh, yeah.
When I first started in the coal mine, they had a bunch of mules to gather the coal inside. Some places they had the mules to bring the coal right to the shaft. And, of course, they had to be fed and taken care of. And it was a big chore put them mules on the cage and bring them out. They could only put one on at a time and bring it out.
Uh-huh.
And they'd have to blindfold them and everything else.
They really got a mean.
In order to do that, well, they had to make a sort of a box stall on the cage there to get the mules in and so on. So they worked pretty good.
Uh-huh.
And they left the mules down in the coal mine all the time for, I would say, a couple of years anyway.
Wow.
When they'd come out on strike, then they'd ice the mules out of the coal mine, and but they had to have a fireman and a pumper and I don't know what else.
Well, what was the fireman's job? What did he do?
Fire the boilers.
Fire the boilers?
Yeah.
Make their own heat for them, run the ice.
But you know,
pumps.
They got so they'd put an electric motor in there. They'd attach it to the icing engine some way so they could run that icing engine with electricity when they were just letting men up and down.
Oh, yeah.
Well, there was two pit bosses and the superintendent and then the mule boss. And, of course,
a lot of chiefs.
They'd maintain the coal mine. They wouldn't produce anything, but they'd just maintain it.
Were they pretty intelligent guys, or just big and rough guys that could handle the men?
What's that?
The bosses, the pit bosses, were they intelligent men, or were they just big and rough and could throw their weight around the handle?
They were just the same as everybody else, you know. There was some fellows as pretty nice fellows, and other ones as cocky,
right,
so on, you know, average
type person they were. You said when they went out on strike, now you were talking about a labor strike.
Yeah.
When they brought the mules up, how often did they have a labor strike, can you remember, or were there many of them?
Well, I can't recall.
Every 2 years, wasn't it? Was
yeah, about every
run from April?
About every couple of years. You'd have to sign up for a new contract.
And then they take those mules. That would be Carl's dad's job a lot of times. Or
to
all
take
the
mules
time,
off.
Was that always your dad's job to take the mules away to pasture?
Well, yeah.
We used to pasture them right over
did
here.
Did you,
remember?
Was there quite a bit of gain as far as wages since the first year you started, like, you started probably around 1917 when the First World War started, and then you quit in 41. Approximately how much did you get an hour or a day when you started?
Well, there wasn't too much of a gain there, but it paid
better.
As good as any place else, if not a little bit better.
Oh, yeah.
Now, the wages at the Ford factory in Detroit there, at that time, the highest wages they paid was $5 a day.
Was that during the First World War, you mean?
Yeah,
well, I don't know during the war or when, but in between the time that I started in the coal mine and till I quit. And when I started in the coal mine, it was paying $5 a day for labor below, and $3 and something on top.
Mm-hmm.
And when I quit, they was paying $7.79 for labor below. And I don't know what it was on top. That is a day.
Yeah, it was probably a couple of dollars cheaper on
top.
Yeah.
So, Dow Chemical, I went up there and I worked there in 34 for 9 months. And I think I got 34 cents an hour up at Dow's.
Oh, yeah.
And you were.
And you probably got laid off because of the depression there.
I was laid off at the coal mine. And you was a slave up there.
At Dow?
Yeah, I worked as an electrician helper. And we carried a paint bucket with us, and if there was any holes to dig to put concrete in, we had to wheel concrete, mix concrete.
It was just hard to work all together. You don't suppose it might be because you're getting a little bit older, where when you went to the mine, you're a lot younger and better shape?
There was no union in there.
There was no
union in there, and
there
was just a flock of men looking for work. And they were standing outside the clock room there every morning. There'd be 25, 30 of them standing out there wanting a job.
Oh, yeah.
Well, if you got a job, why, and wanted to stay working,
right,
you had to do as they say. And if the boss liked you, you might get a little promotion.
Yeah.
And if you didn't like you, you might.
Someone still like that someplace. How about the men that you worked with, or in the mine? Were they much pretty good guys, or were they? Did they drink a lot?
Oh, got along good with everybody I worked
with.
Well,
they made it pretty convenient that they got the first whack of the pay, the saloon.
They were situated
in such places that as soon as the men got paid in cash, didn't they, Carl, for a long time, it made it real convenient for them to go there real quick.
Uh-huh.
And every place where there was a coal mine, that the first thing went up was a saloon. They called them saloons then.
Oh, yeah.
Just men went in, not women.
Were there a bunch of tough guys that worked in the mine?
Oh, man.
Pretty strong, bro.
Nails like nobody's business.
Is that right?
You want to fight?
No,
it
was just average guys.
Yeah. Were most of them, you know, come off the farm?
I'll have to tell you about this. And Granny here knows the fellow. Now, I'm working over here, number two. Frank Heath, do you ever remember old Frank Heath?
No, my dad never talked about him.
He ran an ice cream parlor on Midland Street there. And he was, city commissioner too at one time. And he was operator's commissioner.
House representative.
And he was a bloody Englishman, red-headed. And I worked for him two or three different times. And he just got under my hide so mad that my cousin got killed in the coal mine, but around the coal mine, just through that stubbornness of that old Frank Heath.
Bloody English.
And I was working over here, number two, and I was car knocking, and that was dropping cars out of the rooms.
Mm-hmm.
The motor had shoved the empties up in the rooms, and it went uphill so much that the motor would have a heck of a time getting the car up in there. And then when the digger would have the car loaded, well, I'd put a sprag in every wheel and go down ahead of it and sand a rail. And
what's a sprag?
Just a wooden stick.
Oh, a wooden stick?
It's a wooden stick.
Well, they made wooden sprags at one time, but later on they used just cut a pipe and made a piece of pipe about that long.
So they wouldn't.
But then I'd go and sand the rail, and then I'd kick the block out and let the car go. Well, maybe it'd go 2 or 3 feet and stop. Well, I'd have to loosen up them sprags and get it started again. And finally, the way she'd go out of the room and go down this entry, and there was a sort of a sidetrack there where you coupled it on and made a trip out of it. Well, there was a triplex pump set down there at the bottom, off on the side, and Granny knows about them pumps. They get great big gears on it, and she just a grind and all. You can't even hear yourself think.
Uh-huh.
From that noise, from that pump. Well, there's no light there. And old Jack Suggs was laying track. And he was coming up that entry with a pair of rails in his hands. when one room would work out and another fellow needed to would get worked in a little bit further, he'd have to go in there and lay a pair of rails down for him. The little Jack was coming up that hill with a pair of rails in his hands, and I come out of one of them rooms with a carload of coal, and man, she was just a traveling like lightning. And I whistled and hollered and yelled and everything else, and old Jack, he just dropped the rails in time and jumped out of the road. I was putting it run over. So old Frank Heath, and I seen him, I says, Frank, I says, we ought to have some electric lights along here. I says, I put you around on old Jack's side this morning. Ah, he says, you can't go around here with your bloody eyes shut. You got to keep your eyes open. I didn't say no more. Day or so later, he was sitting on his hunches under by the pump, listening to the pump, and I seen him. So I goes up and I kicks the block off one of them cars, let her go down there and blow my light out. I didn't holler or nothing. Geez, I seen the cap fly one way, and I never went down and looked to see what happened to him.
You don't know whether he died or not, huh?
No. He wasn't it care was only either.
A short time later, the electrician was in there and put up some lights.
You got your point across there.
Yeah.
Huh?
Yeah. That's good.
What about, you said your cousin was killed because it was something he did.
Yeah, he was a young kid just out of
just got married. High school. Been married 6 months.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and he couldn't find nothing to do. And he was tending bar.
That brass rail, I think.
Beer gardens, and the superintendent was Barney Langley. So yeah, Barney Langley felt sorry for him. And
where's your waste paper?
So he took him off the coal mine and gave him a job on top. And where that rock pile is, there used to be a car come down there next to the shaft, and when the rock would come up from down below, why, they'd dump it in that car. And then they'd take it out with a dilly and dump it out there. Well, some of the rock would get rolled off the car on his platform up there. And of course he had to go up there and clean up that rock. And the plank stuck over the timber about 2 feet. And the timber, or the plank, had dry rot in them. And he told old Frank Heath a day or two before, he says, them plank ought to be replaced up there. He says, they all got dry rot. Just as good as the bloody day they was put on. Well, it was only a day or so later that he happened to step back on the end of one of those planks and it broke off. And he was up there probably 12 feet.
Oh, yeah.
12 feet, and underneath that was all concrete, and it had a curb about 4 inches. And he went head over heels and struck his head on that curb and white died right there.
Well, that was something, you know, you couldn't really prove that he did it. That's the old guy. The
if he had replaced that plank.
Right, that would have, it would have eliminated
and,
that.
And
right. Down on the corner.
Yeah, he lives down by the river.
Where you
when somebody gets killed, all the miners go home for that day.
Is that what they did?
And then when I went back the next day,
it was all new plank on there.
It always took an accident for something to happen. You always needed
it. The next day, there was new plank on there.
Down by Mark, remember them two little rent houses?
Yes.
I had several run-ins with him about wages and about different things.
He was just one of the guys, one of those guys that you can remember for a long time.
One that you never forget.
Yeah, he was
Remember Moe's Rushford, policeman?
Who?
Moe's Rushford, he used to
Yeah.
I had a hell of a fight with him, he
Yeah.
Line over there, and I beat him up over there, and the winder got a kick on.
Yeah, you never lost a battle, did you?
Yeah, you lost.
Yeah. You never lost your battle, man.
Here's
a sink. And Charlie Simmons, he was the superintendent then. And so hit Charlie Simmons up for the mule. And he says, "You're too damn young," he says, "to be driving mule. You better be satisfied with what you got."
Was that when he was trapping? You said he had a job trapping? What was a trapper?
Well, that'd be opening those doors.
Where they forced the air
around through, you know.
Well, what did they open the door?